This is special retrospective episode number one of the Secret Identity Podcast for July 15th, 2011. Today we're going to be looking back at some of our favorite interviews with Jim Salicrup, Chris Giarrusso, and Vin Ferrante.
Hello.
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 And hello, everybody. This is Brian Letenry here, as always, with the lovely Matthew A. Herring. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
Not too bad. We are looking back at some of the good times that we've had over the years with Secret Identity. And the way that you and I often look back at these shows, because it's hard to look back at, oh, remember that comic review I did, you know, 5 years ago? We look back through the people that we've sat down and we've talked to, and then the creator spotlights that we've done. And that is sort of the timestamps that we have and the memories that we have of the show as we go back.
And the first one coming up is one that is very early on in our career. We're
very
young kids,
early.
Young kids at this time.
I would say this first interview that we're going to talk about is with Mr. Jim Salicrup, who, of course, is the head honcho over at Paper Cuts.
Yep.
And when we sat down with him, this was in 2006 at the Big Apple Comic Con, and I believe this was the very first show that we ever had a table at.
Yeah, we were tucked up in the corner. And it was so funny because I remember he was a very early interview, one of the first we ever did. And he kind of set the bar. He set the bar a little too high for everybody else that's come along since then.
I mean, all the people that we talk to are nice guys, but the three that are in this particular episode that we have right here and now are super, super nice guys.
Yeah.
And Jim Salicrup is not only a fantastic guy and very gracious with his time, but he is a fantastic ambassador for comics in general. And this first interview that we did with him was you sitting on one side of him, me sitting on the other side of him, the three of us huddled over one USB mic that was plugged into my laptop and chatting at Big Apple Comic Con as people walked around the whole time. And the audio quality is not the best, but you have to remember that this is very, very early days, Secret Identity, and it's a great interview. And I think one of the things I wanted to do and you wanted to do as we were looking back at these three retrospective episodes that we're doing is, if someone never listened to the show before and they wanted to know like what we're all about, and or they maybe have been listening for the past 50 episodes of Secret Identity and they're like, why do these guys always talk about this guy?
Yeah.
Why do these guys always talk about Chris Giarrusso? Who's this Chris Giarrusso guy or this Jim Salicrup? They keep talking about what a great guy he is. Wasn't he some editor that worked for Marvel back in the day or something? These interviews that we're going to have over the next few shows, I think will shed a lot of light on why we are big fans of these people and why we've become good friends with them in some cases. And so I'm excited for this first one because it's really, really old. And when I was listening to it the other day, you and I actually sound younger.
If
that's possible,
yeah,
you and I sound younger.
Because we're more nervous.
This was a 32-year-old Brian. And how old are you 5 years ago?
38.
So you were on the young side of 40.
You had one kid then.
I had one kid then. I mean, the amount of stuff, looking back, you know what? That's a good place to start because we have like four or five questions that people posted on the boards and we're going to sprinkle them throughout these three episodes. So Lungs had a couple of questions. So let me ask one of those now. He said, what was your all-time favorite interview? What are you most proud of pertaining to Secret Identity? And what's been the hardest part of Secret Identity? So before we get into Jim Salicrup, who is one of my top five interviews of all time, tell us what is one of your favorite interviews of all time?
I would have to say Aaron Gray, who we're going to be hearing from a little bit later.
Yes.
Simply because I knew absolutely nothing about what I was getting into with her. And you don't like comic book guys are more down to earth. When you're talking to somebody that is a you know, Hollywood celebrity, you have to approach things at a different angle.
Yeah.
And whatever angle I came in on, she seemed to be more than accommodating. And we'll talk a little bit more about that.
And my favorite interview of all time is the interview I did with Dan Slott probably a year and a half ago.
But over breakfast.
It was over lunch at New York Comic Book Marketplace, which is also in one of our retrospectives. But right now, let's kick things off with an interview with Mr. Jim Salicrup, who, again, is the head honcho over at Paper Cuts and just an all-around fantastic guy.
This is Matt and Brian here with Jim Salicrup. Jim, welcome to the Secret Identity Podcast.
Wow, the Secret Identity Podcast.
Yes.
Wow, that's all the rage now, people revealing their secret identities.
Yes, and actually we came out and named our podcast before they did a whole crossover event on it.
We are the forerunners.
So yes. You were ahead of the curve.
Yeah, we didn't get any royalties off of that idea, amazingly enough.
Well, you got to work on that. Get good lawyers.
Absolutely.
That's the whole secret. If you get good lawyers, then forget identities. The secret is good lawyers.
There you go. Well, we do have James Martin, who's our lawyer on the staff. So we're
well, he's the lawyer without peer, if
he
I
is the lawyer
recall
without
correctly.
Peer, if I'm
yes,
not
he
mistaken.
Is. Yes, he is.
This is like a Robert Altman movie where we get to talk over each other. I like that.
Absolutely.
This is cutting edge podcasting.
Cutting edge technology right here.
This is craziness. This is sheer craziness.
Well,
the big question we're going to ask you, Jim, is what are you doing now? People know your history, your time at Marvel. A lot of people don't know of your Star Spangled War stories, number 164, with a letter printed in it.
Was it 164 or 182?
Oh boy, I'm going to have to go check that one.
I didn't know about it until I saw it.
But what are you doing right now?
Well, there's a little company that the publisher of NBM, which he was like Terry Nantier, who's been a pioneer in graphic novels. And he and I have been talking since the days I was editor-in-chief at Topps Comics, when we all sort of worked on this Ray Bradbury comics. There was the guy packaging Ray Bradbury comics was the late, great Byron Price. And Topps Comics was publishing the comic book version, and Terry Nantier of NBM, which has been publishing graphic novels for over 30 years now, they did the hardcover editions for schools and libraries and bookstores. We had started talking after I left Topps about starting some type of comics publishing program that would reach, I think we were talking about girls, because everyone, there was like Friends of Lulu was created. Everyone was saying, here's this category that wasn't being addressed by any of the publishers. So that was the original motivation for us. We were thinking, well, maybe we could, you know, together we could come up with some stuff that for that target audience. Years later, after I wound up working a couple of years at the ill-fated Stan Lee Media, but having a time of my life there, finally Terry and I were ready to go. We started a new company that was named by his brilliant daughter. It was called Paper Cuts. And what we've been doing is not just young girls, but the whole tween and teen category. We've been creating graphic novels geared especially for them. So that's what I've been up to the last couple of years now.
What are the main titles that you guys offer through that company right now?
We started with the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew. Nancy Drew has really taken off. The first one's in its fourth big printing right now. The first one also recently won a Ben Franklin Award for Best Graphic Novel last year. It keeps going on and on. We have box sets coming out in time for Christmas later this year, which will include a free Nancy Drew computer game, which if you just bought the game itself, which is available on its own from Her Interactive, that's $20. But it's quite a bargain just to get the box set of the first four Nancy Drews. But Nancy Drew's been very big for us. It's written by Stefan Petrucca, who I worked with back at Topps. He wrote the X-Files for us. He's doing a great job. There's a sensational new artist named Sho Morassi who's doing just stunning artwork. If people are fans of anime at all, when they look at the Nancy Drew artwork, it looks as if this was an animated film that we're just taking stills from, but all this artwork was created just for our graphic novels. We also added Zorro, which is something I was also working on back at Topps with the same writer, Don McGregor, but this is sort of a manga-style version. We're adding, be out later this year, from the Cartoon Network, Totally Spies, And we'll be doing lots of stuff with them. It's a very funny show, and the artwork, I think, on these comics will surprise people. It's very, very close to the animated series, but very rich. It's not a simplified version. It's just as rich as the animation, full color throughout. We're even doing an odd thing, which way back when I was at Marvel, I had edited a comic book that was about the life of Pope John Paul II. Well, now it's years later, and now all the rage is graphic novels. And that book that I had done at Marvel was such a success, but eventually went out of print. So we wound up finding a new complete biography of Pope John Paul II that was produced in Italy, and we got the rights to that, and we're publishing that sort of as a little different, as a one-shot from Paper Cuts, just because I think it's such a well-done book, and it's about a person who's dedicated their life just to peace and love and trying to make the world a better place, and he had a lot of respect for kids. He had started World Kids Day and felt the future lies with children, and he was very supportive of the idea of reaching people even through comics. So someone as popular as that, to get their blessing, so to speak, it was irresistible, so we're publishing that as well. But we have lots of other projects coming up in the future. I can't announce any of them now, but it's just been very exciting working with the talent we have, the writers, the artists, the properties. Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew have both been around for over 75 years, and have worked on something as new as the Totally Spies characters, which have been on Cartoon Network and are doing incredibly well. It's just very exciting to me. I'm enjoying it.
Well, and I have to say, I absolutely love the fact that you guys took Zorro, Nancy Drew, the Hardy Boys, and you're reintroducing them to this younger generation now, because, you know, Matt and I grew up reading the Hardy Boys.
And watching the show.
and loving those books.
More watching the show than reading the books for me.
I had a whole collection of the books, and I got to tell you, I think that to me is fantastic, because Matt and I talk a lot about the fact that the comics industry overall is not geared towards children these days, and there's not enough good comics and graphic novels for kids that are appropriate but are also well done. And so I think what you guys are doing is just phenomenal for that younger generation. It's great.
Well, I can't thank you enough, and I have to admit, I mean, there's all sorts of other aspects that also appeal to me about these properties. For example, even the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew, when you mentioned the growing up with the original books, part of what we're doing is we do paperback editions, which are the mass market version, but for primarily for libraries, and I feel for true collectors, we also have the hardcover editions, which are basically the same size as the original books, and there's only, I guess, a true collector or fan could really understand the kind of thrill you get when you start putting these little books on a bookcase and you line them up, and it's just fun, you know, aside from the story value, just the collecting value of starting this little library when you're a kid, and these are books that you like and you're choosing and building up your collection on your own. There's that aspect is fun, and the characters are incredible. They to last this long, and when you think about it, Zorro, Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew have been around longer than any of the superheroes.
Yep.
Superman's probably the oldest superhero. He was like, I guess what, 39 started.
Yeah.
You know, so he came along a little later. Nancy's the newest of the bunch of Zorro, Hardy Boys, and Nancy Drew, and she came around 1930.
Yep.
And just like the other characters that everyone else has grown up with, all these characters have evolved and have changed to reflect the times. What's interesting, probably, about Nancy to me is that, unlike a lot of female characters who have had to be radically adjusted to become more contemporary, Nancy, in a way, was way ahead of all the other female comic book characters in that she was always very much very independent, very smart, always attractive, and just, you know, capable of doing almost anything the boys can do. And yep. And she was never making speeches about that aspect right. of it. It was just someone, and she had great friends, and they were a lot of fun. And it was just a lot of richness in this stuff. They're easily dismissible by, cynical, intellectual elitists, perhaps. But for people who just recognize the appeal of these characters and what's sort of good about them, yep. they're really kind of irresistible. And there's a lot more to them than someone may initially suspect. And it's a lot of fun to spend time with these characters.
I don't think you could have put it any better. Yep. And I'm glad you brought up the piece about libraries, because that's another thing that we talk about a lot on the show, is that libraries a lot of times don't look at the graphic novel market as something that they want to bring into the library. And that's unfortunate, because sometimes they don't realize kind of the spectrum of graphic novels that are out there that would be great to have in a library. And so we've encouraged people through the show to go to their local library and to talk to them about comics and graphic novels that they want to see on the shelves. And I can't think of any better graphic novels to have on the shelves than the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew. I mean, if there was a set of those in every library in America, I don't think we'd be too bad off. That's a good start.
Well, thank you so much. I can't thank you enough for that. One of the things about our books that we're trying to be very conscious of, and to be fair, I mean, this is something, even Stan Lee, when he was at Marvel, Stan's one of the nicest guys in the world. And it's very rare that you'll ever see him really get upset. But one of the things that was always very important to him was that he wanted the grammar and the spelling to always be correct in the comic books. He was always, in his own way, trying to combat the image that comics were for morons and they were somehow sub-literature or illiterate material. And he always, prided himself on not writing down to the audience using language that their adults would, have problems with, perhaps even. It was just very intelligently written, well-done, entertaining material. And we're trying to emulate that, in that we'll go over these books from every angle. We want librarians to be able to look at the books we're producing and feel that, hey, we're not playing it up too much, because primarily we want the books to be entertaining, but along the way there's a little bit of educational material thrown in there. And we're very careful that it's all very correct and well researched, and as best as we, we're only human, but we're not mm-hmm. perfect. But we're trying to make this material that librarians and schools can feel confident that no parent's going to come in one day, hold a book under their nose and say, what kind of stuff are you giving my kids here? And because what could happen, and this has been discussed by others, it's nothing new, is that so much of comics is all lumped together. When you say graphic novels, it's all lumped together. When you say manga, there's as many varieties of Japanese comics as there are any other type of comics. And you just can't take any one of them, throw them into a school, and say, well, this is okay for fourth graders.
Right.
I mean, the content is all over the place. There's adult material that's done. There's cultural differences. The reason, we went with such American icons as Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys is we wanted an audience of librarians and educators to feel that they knew what they were getting, that there weren't going to be any surprises. And we're very careful with what we're doing. Even then, there are surprises.
Yep.
I mean, some of the feedback on the early Nancy Drews really took me off guard. Because everything, I guess, is context. Compared to some of the comic book covers that feature female characters that Marvel and DC are producing, where the artists are using models that are probably taken out of Maxim or Playboy or something like that, we figured, well, Nancy and her friends, they're just sort of attractive teenagers.
Yep.
But Nancy Drew has had such a conservative, traditional look for so long that some diehard Nancy Drew fans were almost shocked by our interpretation of Nancy, and it made me look twice at it again.
Yep.
Are we doing? Did I miss something? Is there something wrong here? And we haven't changed it that much. We're just being a little bit more careful in how she dresses and what have you. Not to make it too sexy, but just to make keep the characters who they are and make sense what they're wearing for what they're doing and appropriate for the story. So it's a tricky thing. We want everyone to feel secure that what we're doing is wholesome, fun, all ages material. And that's the flip side when I say all ages. For some reason, whenever you say all ages, people take that to mean, well, that's just for kids.
Right.
Yet I have to admit, if I wasn't working on these books, particularly even Nancy Drew, it's something I enjoy reading. And I'm certainly not a little kid anymore. So it's... One of the things that I think when you sort of touched upon it was when I was growing up, even though there was the comics code, all comics, in a sense, had to be suitable for all ages. Now that the code is not what it used to be, it's only a few companies subscribing to it now, there's a movement that, particularly in bookstores and libraries, they want to categorize everything. Is this just for this audience? Is this just for that audience? And part of what was great about the comics I used to read is that they were great for any age. There are still movies that, if they're done well enough, adults can enjoy them, kids can enjoy them.
Yep.
And they're not necessarily, pablum or sickly sweet. They could still be well-done material. And that's really, I think, the niche... Ultimately, paper cuts is trying to fill.
Well, that we absolutely support that, and we want to funnel people to your website, which is papercutswithaz.com, where you can find out more about all the books that Paper Cuts is publishing right now. We want to thank Jim Salicrup for taking time to sit down with us again. It's always a pleasure to see you here. And for anybody that comes to see Jim at these shows, get one of his $5 sketches. They're phenomenal.
They're not lousy.
No,
they're lousy sketches. That's what they're. But they're only $5.
That's right.
And if you're below the age of 12, they're probably even free.
Thanks again, Jim. We wish you continued success and good luck with Paper Cuts.
Well, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Take it easy.
Alrighty, and hopefully people enjoyed that interview with Mr. Jim Salicrup. Now let's talk about our second interview of this retrospective episode, and that is Mr. Chris Giaruso.
And Chris is another one of those guys that we reference all the time because he's more than just a friend. I mean, I have few people that I really, really consider brothers, and I look at Chris like a brother. I know you do as well. Anytime we've ever asked anything, he's always there. He made our postcards.
Yes.
When he at first said, I can't do the next round because I'm really busy, 2-3 days later, we got pencil sketches of him.
And if you're looking at the Secret Identity website now, one of the two banners that we have alternating on the site is from Mr. Chris Giaruso from that postcard that he did. He's an amazing guy. We've interviewed him probably 3 or 4 times on the show.
Yep.
This one, I think, is from New York Comic Con over in, actually, it's either New York Comic Con or New York Comic Book Marketplace, but... Chris is just one of those amazing guys that we talk about all the time. And if people were wondering who he is and what he does, this is a good interview to sort of give you an overview.
Yeah, one of the most talented people in the industries and one of the most solid human beings you'll ever meet.
And the Creator Spotlight coming to you once again from New York Comic Con in the, I guess we could say this is probably the farthest point of Artist Alley. We're in the back.
Yeah, back right corner. Nowhere further to go other than through the wall.
There we go. And I've seen your arms, so you could probably get us through. But we are joined by the very muscular, very handsome, very talented Chris Giaruso. How are you?
Doing well.
These are always probably the worst time to talk to you at the last moments of the con because you get tired. I don't want to say you get cranky, but you're a little tired. I mean, you've been drawing nonstop since you've been here. And one of the things that I've noticed from a lot of people doing interviews while they draw is that it is almost a stop, start.
Yeah.
You get a little tired after they leave. All of a sudden, somebody comes in, and you're supposed to show them the same energy you did. And you should be showing the same energy you did from the first person that walked in.
Yeah,
you see that happening?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's kind of, at the beginning of the con, you're all charged up and you're ready for, a lot of fun. And it can be fun, and it usually is fun, but it's also extremely stressful because sometimes you'll be having three or four different people trying to talk to you at the same time, and you want to give everybody equal attention and you know, respect them and make sure that everybody's happy, and it's not always the easiest thing to do.
So you just got done with a couple panels too, so again, you've just been talking for the last two hours.
Actually, those panels were actually a welcome break, because I was on panel with so many other interesting people. I didn't have to really talk at all, and I just kind of relaxed, so I actually feel pretty good right now. This is the perfect time for an interview.
And you were also drawing while we were doing it, doing the panel, and the panel that I did with you, I was the moderator on it. I was so distracted by you drawing, only because I'm like, look at this. It's Captain America. Look, he's making the Silver Surfer. No, that's Iceman. And that was a note I passed you saying it looked like a shaky Silver Surfer, because I thought you were drawing and you like your hand was shaking. But it was Iceman.
Yeah, you know, everyone gets my Iceman and Silver Surfer mixed up. But the key is that the Silver Surfer I draw doesn't have a nose or ears.
Or icicles.
That too, yeah.
So I know I always ask you this, and this is kind of a boring question, but I'd love to find out, what is the most asked-for character that you've been drawing all weekend?
You know, it's like in the beginning when I first started doing conventions, everybody wanted Spider-Man, and it was Spider-Man, Spider-Man, Spider-Man. Occasionally somebody wants something else. Now it's just a mixed bag. You can get anything. I don't think I drew the same character twice this convention. I drew Red Lantern today.
Have you noticed all the different Green Lantern shirts? I don't know if you're following what's going on.
Yeah, I have noticed. Because I saw somebody with the Blue Lantern shirt, and I thought that symbol looked different from the comic that I read. It's hard to keep them all straight, but it's pretty cool.
I mean, everybody's wearing them, so I guess I got to go get one, because all the cool kids apparently are getting them.
But what color are you going to get?
That's the thing. I'd probably get, I don't know, I would say blue because I'm so wanting peace, but my wife would say get red because you're going to be an idiot when you get home. You're overtired.
You get red for your wife.
Maybe. You've seen her. I don't know if you've seen her mad.
I'm just joking.
Plus, I have to ask you for something for one of her students, but hey, that's another time. Another story. So you're hanging out with your good friend Eric Shabbat. How's that been working out?
Well, it's Jacob Shabbat.
Jacob, what did I say? Eric? Oh yeah. Boy, sorry. Cut. Take two.
Yeah, feel free to edit this out as long as you want. I'm set up with my friend Jacob Shabbat in Artist Alley, and he's another brilliant cartoonist who draws the Mighty Skullboy Army, published by Dark Horse Comics. And we set up and we do sketches for the fans all day.
And I was going to tell you too, this is the first time in a long time I've seen you at your table with a lot of books out there to sell. You've had three different digests come out this year, probably in the last couple months, of the mini Marvel collections.
Yeah, well, there's two, volume two just came out. The first volume had two printings, so there's two covers, so yeah, I got three piles going. And then I make sure when someone picks up a book they want to buy, I say, well, you know, just so you know, that's the same as this one. And then sometimes they go, oh, I already have that one, thanks. And you know, but at the same time, there's some people that want both covers, so I put them out there.
That's good, because you're not here to screw anybody. You're here just to make fans and make everybody happy.
If they're going to buy two, I want them to buy the right two, not duplicates, you know.
So how have those sold? Because, you know, we've talked about this before that, you know, sometimes they may not be put in the right hands. I'm wondering how sales have been on those, and are we going to be seeing any more mini Marvels?
That's something that Marvel handles internally, and they don't really share that information with me, so I can't really answer that with any kind of educated knowledge. So I don't know.
Between one and a million.
I don't know. They're 20. 20 out of a million.
There we go. Now, you also had a re-release of the G-Man one shot.
Right.
Which I absolutely love to death, and everybody who should get one who hasn't read it needs to get one. However, it sold out. That must have been a good feeling.
Yeah, that was really cool. I mean, the book originally came out back in 2004, and then recently with the mini Marvel success, Image decided it'd be good to, you know, resolicit and just let people know, like, hey, this thing exists. And this time it sold out in the first week. So the next step is, well, do we want to offer this again? And what we decided to do, there's been a lot of G-Man material since then, since that book was originally done. So we're going to collect it all into the same kind of format as the Mini Marvels Digest. It's going to be a G-Man Digest coming out in May.
That's excellent. And you also have, this must be a big thrill for you, there's a big anniversary in Marvel for Thor. I mean, this is a landmark issue number 600.
That's right.
And you would think that they're going to be getting the best of the best on that book, and they have gotten the best of the best. Can you tell me some of the people that are involved with Thor 600?
Well, you might think best of the best. My knee-jerk reaction was they need 7 pages to fill. Chris has nothing to do. Let's throw that guy a bone. But no, it's an honor to be involved in something like that. It's awesome, and Stan Lee's working on it, like you said. And what was your question?
How cool is it?
Very.
There we go. So just think, somebody's going to come up one day with you to sign that book, and Stan Lee's signature is going to be on it too. So you and Stan the man and Chris the dude.
Absolutely. Chris the dude.
That's your new name. Now, before we finish up, I have to talk to you about this little, you know, kind of side project and side life you've been doing. You're an actor now.
I am. Am I? Oh, right.
Tell us a little bit about your, was that your film debut?
Yes, it was. That was the first, a couple of buddies of mine that you know, friends of the show, Mark Dworkin and Eugene Leonard, they wrote a book that I drew called Andy. That was a prequel to a movie that they filmed called Armageddon for Andy. And Eugene recently has been involved in some film projects that they enter in the Channel 101 contest. They're short video episodes that get voted on week after week. And they needed an extra to play a particularly important role in one of their episodes of The Outer Boroughs. And they called me up to play Bigfoot and gave me the gorilla costume. And I played a gorilla who was mistaken for Bigfoot, and that's the acting role.
Now, did you actually learn sign language for that part of the role? Because there was a scene, and we'll have to set it up, where one of the guys who's kind of a loser, lives in the outer boroughs, is chasing down what he thinks is Bigfoot. It ends up being a gorilla escape from the zoo, which you've really played two roles. That's a lot like Parent Trap. So they're multifaceted on this one.
It's exactly like Parent Trap.
And what happened is when his partner, who's probably a little smarter than him, confronted him and said, "That's not Bigfoot, you idiot. It's an ape that escaped from the zoo." You had to do some sign language. Yeah. Is that actual sign language?
I'd like to say that I studied for weeks and weeks and really threw myself into the role, but it was all improv.
You were awesome. I thought that was a great, great catch. Are you going to be doing any more acting or anything else we can see?
Well, I told Eugene that if you ever need somebody to another extra or anything in any of those things, that I'm more than happy. It's a lot of fun. It's a nice break from worrying about my own stories and just jump in and goof around and play like I'm a little kid.
There you go, and it's nice to have a kid that you can play with that has $1 million camera setup.
Yeah, absolutely.
And can edit movies.
Sure. And he's doing all the hard work. I just go in and have fun.
I'm going to let you go because you got a pile of fans that are waiting for you. But once again, thank you for joining us. www.chrisgcomics.com is where you need to go for all things Chris Giarrusso. Any new animation coming? Please say yes.
Yes.
Truth?
Yes, absolutely. No, it is.
Excellent.
You know, the first animation that I started when I was trying to learn those Flash cartoons was pretty ambitious compared to the rest of them. And it was maybe 90% done, and it's been 90% done for the last 4 years. And I want to get it finished up and ready for when the G-Man Digest comes out. I want to have it out by May at least. I don't know. I got nothing else to say. It's good. It's going to be my best cartoon yet.
There you go. And thank you again for joining us. And from the back part of Artist Alley, I guess the alley of Artist Alley, with Chris Giarrusso, this is the Batman on behalf of Brian. Have yourself a good time till we talk again.
All right. And we're going to round out our interviews today with a very good friend of ours, again, who people probably have heard us mention, either him or his book on the show, and maybe wondering, who is this man of mystery? And that is Mr. Vin Ferrante.
I'm waiting for a phone call from him as we speak, to be honest.
Yes. I actually just got Witch Hunter issue number 5 in the mail yesterday, and Vin is a guy that we met at a Big Apple show years ago, who came up to us, I believe at the behest of his wife.
Yes.
Because we were interviewing people, and we first started talking about Witch Hunter, which is this fantastic book. Vin runs Monarch Comics, and Witch Hunter is the lead character in his stable. And Witch Hunter issue 5 is going to be available for sure at New York Comic Con this year. We just got a copy of it. It'll probably be up on drive-thru soon. And the first trade is out now. He is an amazing guy.
Yeah.
And he was a guy who is one of the few people that sort of has interests that are very diverse, but some that fall into my camp and some that fall into your camp, which makes him the perfect friend for the two of us.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking that if we're in a car together, the three of us, he's the one that gets tired because he'll turn around and say, hey, Brian, I really enjoyed that crazy horror movie that you were talking about. And then when you guys are done, he'll look at me and go, what about Planet of the Apes? Then he'll go to you and talk music. And then he comes to me and talks music.
Right. He's a fantastic guy. Super nice guy. We'll obviously be spending a lot of time at the Monarch booth again at New York Comic Con this year. And we'll be going to some baseball games with him this year as well.
Yes. And you know what? His wife, Lisa, is fantastic. She's a great woman for him, and she's been a good friend to us as well.
Not only does she put up with him, she puts up with us.
She puts up with us.
And has sort of welcomed us into the family, which has been really amazing. So,
and their poor daughter, every time we walk in, she's just like, oh, yeah. These bozos again.
It's sad for her.
Yeah.
But it's been a great experience and one of the best friends that we've made in doing Secret Identity. So so Vin is going to be our third interview here. But before we wrap up, I just wanted to hit on a couple of Lung's other questions. So he said, what are you most proud of pertaining to Secret Identity?
I think for me it would be the reputation that we have within the comic community. We have never gone anywhere and had people be like, oh, I don't want to talk to those guys. People want to come talk to us. People talk, you know, come freely to talk to us. And I'm really most proud of that.
It's funny because I wrote a note next to this when it says, what are you most proud of? I wrote, we're nice.
That's what I wrote.
But yep. But I guess what I'm most proud of is that we are here to celebrate the things that we love.
Yep.
And also, although sometimes we can get passionately angry about certain things that happen with the things that we love, we want to see people succeed.
Yeah.
And when we meet people, we want to befriend them. And we want to support the things that they're doing. And I think in seeing how hard people work in this industry, especially the indie guys, and pour their life savings and their heart and soul into these things and all of that stuff, I almost consider it to be part of our mission to help them,
yeah,
to support them, to do whatever we can do. So I am also proud of the fact that I hope that we have developed a good reputation in the comics community in general as a couple of nice guys who don't have any other agenda than to give you an outlet to talk about what you love because they love the same thing.
Yeah, and we've never, ever put it in the, that guy owes me an interview because of the wonderful things we said about this book. We go at it and say, we'd love to talk to you because we're really interested in what you do and we think our friends that listen to the show would be just as interested.
Right. So I think we're on the same page about that. And then what's been the hardest part of Secret Identity?
There's a couple things, obviously committing to it every week, but once it's in the planner, we know Thursdays are it. I think honestly, the hardest thing for me is when we get to a show and I'm like, all right, I got 15 interviews already, that motivation to get started, because I walk into a show, I become a geek kid. I become that kid that's like, look at that big thing over there. Look at that shiny rock. And I just get completely distracted.
I think the hardest thing is to not ever let it become work.
Yeah.
Because we love this. And that, I think, is one of the reasons, again, that we're sort of relaunching the show, is that sometimes you have to remind yourself that you're talking about the things that you love.
Yeah.
And even though it's like homework sometimes because you have to read certain books and get ready and stuff like that, this is playtime.
Yeah.
We get to come out and play every week and talk to each other about stuff that we love. And sometimes we need to remind ourselves of that. And so the hardest part sometimes is just saying, you know what? You're doing this because you really enjoy it.
Yeah.
You're not doing it out because you're not getting paid for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's certainly not your job.
Or as our wives say, you guys are losing money by doing this.
Exactly. So we're doing it because we love it. And sometimes you got to remind yourself that that's why you're doing it. So thanks for the questions, Lungs. We have more questions that we're going to talk about in the next episode, but we're going to end today with the Vin Ferrante interview. That's going to do it for this retrospective episode of Secret Identity, but we've got two more to go. So we will see you 1 week from today. Or maybe a few days earlier. Who's to say? We're going to space them out. But we'll talk to you anyway soon, and we'll have that second retrospective episode. Have a great rest of your week, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Alrighty, and this is Brian here, and it is day two of New York Comic Con. Absolute insanity, but luckily, I have taken sanctuary in the Witch Hunter's Lair because I am at the Monarch Comics booth with our very good friend Vin Ferrante. How are you, sir?
Good, Vin. How you doing?
I'm doing very much better now that I'm sitting down here with you in the middle of this booth, which is just as crazy as everywhere else because people are flipping out over Witch Hunter.
Yeah, I mean, it literally is like an eye in the middle of a storm, but I mean, we've just been like overwhelmed this year, but like, and really honored at how many people have just been stopping and talking to us, and just a hell of a lot of like industry people too, which is like really like, you know, validating that we've had a couple of publishers from overseas that want to talk to us about a trade. We have a domestic publisher that wants to talk to us about single issue and trade stuff, and just like a lot of fans just going by and like buying the book and stuff, which has been really, really nice.
And you're a staple at the New York Comic Con. So over the years, as you've been here to this year, how has your booth evolved and how has your approach evolved as you come into this 2010 show? How are things different now?
Well, I think both for us and for Reed, which does New York Comic Con, I think it's grown exponentially every year. This is the fifth one, and it was I didn't exhibit the first 2 years, but I walked through, and you know, it was very professional. But in terms of, you know, the size, just the amount of people that come through and the diversity of the companies just like ramps up every single year. As far as what we've done, when we first started, we had a basic setup with a banner and, you know, and like literally just like the first issue out. And now we've got, you know, the Witch Hunter stand up and brand new banner. We've got four issues. We're being covered in Strange Eons Horror Magazine. And, you know, Witch Hunter is basically in, you know, a couple of different crossovers. So it's been great in terms of just how we've been able to sort of get him out there and seen in a lot of different ways.
And I think spending time with you and seeing the stuff that you guys have at the booth this year, what stands out to me is there is sort of different tiers to people who are exhibiting here at New York Comic Con. And when you see people first starting out and they maybe have an issue or two issues of a book, there's that sort of almost standoffishness on people because they're not sure, is this thing even going to be around when I'm back here next year? When you come over here this year, you've got your first four issues here. You've basically got your first trade done. And people see not only that you've been here for years now, but you have almost instant credibility just by the volume of work that you have on display.
Yeah, and that's exactly what people have been saying. It's like you had people who were interested that they liked the work. They, you know, they like that Witch Hunter has like a very fun, friendly, irreverent, very, you know, heroic look to him. But the fact that there wasn't as much there, people were kind of unsure where it was going. But now that the first four issues are out, and you know, it was, you know, organically designed to be a primer for the series, so people are just flipping through and they're sort of like getting the sense of that. And from the people who've actually bought it and then came back and talked to us at this show alone, like, they actually get it. And I'm really glad because it's the type of stuff that I would want to see, that I would want to buy. I mean, each issue is a story on its own, but at the same time, when we catch people up on the inside front cover, we've got somebody that's in the book actually pictured there talking to you. You know, we don't want to just put a text box. We want to make it a little bit more personalized, but the first four issues alone is a primer for the series. You learn his origin, you learn the origins of all the people that are going to be the major players, and you also learn what the book is about. Like, you know, the fact that he's trying to wake people up to the fact that our power is being stolen from us, and they're trying to change the world to something we don't want it to be. And, you know, so it's a different approach. I mean, he doesn't hunt witches because he's a witch himself, in case anybody doesn't know that. It's sort of like a metaphor. I mean, if a witch is really bad, I mean, there's, you know, there's a possibility that she might wake up with some explosives under the castle, but that's just fun.
Yeah, and I love what you've done with the more recent issues. As you mentioned, you've got this character who's bringing people into the fold right away, and we talk all the time on Secret Identity about comics not being accessible enough to the reader who's picking up issue number 3, and that's their first comic, or it's their first, you know, introduction to Witch Hunter. And I think you've done a really good job now. When you pick up a book, you get a feel for the universe, you get a feel for the characters, and even though the story's tied into a much larger arc,
right,
there's plenty to make up a full story in each issue, which I think is really great, because everybody can pick up any issue of it and get right into it.
Well, thanks. I mean, it's hard too, because, you know, what if somebody wants to buy it a year down the road and we've got, you know, we've got 10 out at that point? You know, you want to be able to pick it up. So, I mean, I think it's, if you put like a little caption explaining what's, you know, what the book is about in general, and then you have somebody in the book explaining this is what's happened up to this point in the story, you get, you know, it's a little bit more accessible. Plus, each four issues is designed to be traded while holding together on its own. So by the time I'm done with the story I want to tell, it'll be about 60 issues or 15 trades, and then it'll resolve into an open-ended storyline, the world that I think a lot of people would want to see, where I can just do more self-contained stuff, you know, like, you know, Witch Hunter and the history of the Haunted Castle, or, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, I think I've said this before, probably on one of the last interviews that we did. I mean, I was basically influenced by Universal Monsters, Commandy, Planet of the Apes, Dark Shadows, and I just want to use all these things to kind of tell, you know, the type of story that I'd like to see the world eventually become, you know? So, not, you know, as for monsters necessarily, but, you know, I think that we're telling something which actually has a sense of empowerment to it without hitting you over the head.
Right. Yeah, and if the four issues that you have here were not enough, one of the things that you just mentioned a few minutes ago that I think is really cool is Witch Hunter has been appearing in Strange Eons magazine. So for people who are not familiar with Strange Eons, can you tell a little bit about that and how Witch Hunter has been in that magazine in his own story, which I am very partial to because you and I are both fans of The King in Yellow. So yeah. Tell us a little bit about the Strange Eons odyssey.
Yeah, I originally started doing stories for a magazine called Planet Lovecraft. And since then, the publisher of Planet Lovecraft has started a new magazine called Strange Eons. And that is sort of like Lovecraftian Lycar. It's not necessarily directly tied into H.P. Lovecraft or one of his major influences, Robert W. Chambers, who wrote The King in Yellow, but sort of that strange gothic type of horror related more to the elder gods or things which are not seen but sort of, you know, scratch at the back of your consciousness. I think the things that we're all afraid of, which is what The King in Yellow is about. I had just done a self-contained story, it's basically Witch Hunter in a Lovecraftian type story. And the publisher said, I'd like you to do something related to The King in Yellow. And The King in Yellow is, again, one of the biggest influences to Robert W. Chambers. He's described as a being who lives on this lost, dying planet named Carcosa. And I think that's really the true essence of horror. You never really find out what he is. I think what he is I think that he is the sum of all of the hidden truths that each one of us has. What are each one of us the most afraid of? That is a piece of The King in Yellow inside of us, which is why, secretly, we all serve him. Unless, of course, you're one of the rare people who's able to look inside and say, you know what, this is what I'm most afraid of. I'm going to move past it, but so few people ever do, at least completely. So that's what The King in Yellow is about. It's about people who, in various degrees, either give in to their fears or who wind up serving The King in Yellow because they're so afraid, people like Napoleon and Hitler, that they just try and grab for more power. And in the story that we're doing, Witch Hunter and the Strange Eons house hero, which is called the Night Gaunt, which is based on a part of a Lovecraft poem, Witch Hunter travels back to 1893, and there is a actors troupe called the Company of the King in Yellow. And what they do is they put on this play, and if you see this play, you go insane. And so Witch Hunter travels back in time using his witch watch. He allows him to pass through a mirror in 2010. He comes out of a mirror in a theater in Paris in 1893, and him and the Night Gaunt basically take on the minions of the King in Yellow. So it's I'm extremely scarred. I had to read the book about 20 times before I wrote this story, and every time I think about it, I feel like I lose a little bit of myself, but in a good way.
Yeah. And it's so funny because before you ever told me that you had written that story for Strange Eons, I did the National Novel Writing Month a few years ago, NaNoWriMo, and the story that I wrote was based on The King in Yellow. And so before you and I even really talked about that interest that we both had, it turns out we were both creating things that were very tied into The King in Yellow, which I thought was super cool because there's a lot of people out there who aren't even familiar with that character or that concept or that story or anything like that, which is just so creepy. And I think if you're a Lovecraft fan and you're not familiar with The King in Yellow, you should totally familiarize yourself with it because it's that same type of otherworldly creepy, but in a whole different way.
No, I agree. I mean, I think, like, for instance, I like all types of horror, but if you're going to classify what I think is true horror, it's the unknown, the unseen, and the unspoken. I think the closest thing in the modern era which has gotten close to that is Freddy Krueger, only because there is a lot of stuff which is more about what you don't know about him, because the realm of dreams is so unknown. But for the most part, so much of horror now is so laid out and so explained and so gory. And the reason that Lovecraft and Robert W. Chambers before him were so successful, it's because all they did was hint at what was going to happen. And you filled in the rest. And anything that you could possibly make up in your head is far more terrifying than anything that we know. I mean, one of the other people I think that does it the best, but has only had a couple that I think have really been truly terrifying on film is Stephen King, because his new novel, Under the Dome, Hearts in Atlantis, and I'm just getting started with the Dark Tower series, but, you know, he clearly likes that type of stuff. He clearly likes Lovecraft. And you basically see that you were actually mentioning on a recent show that Guillermo del Toro is making it The Mountains of Madness. So that is, I think, I mean, Lovecraft is definitely coming into his own. Hopefully it won't be like The Bed, you know, but I think for the most part, I think a lot of people are scared of looking too deeply into stuff like that. And I don't blame them, really. You know?
No, I hear you. And so it's awesome to see the issues of Strange Eons here and see that right next to Witch Hunter, because you just have this body of work now that I think anybody that comes by the booth can totally see that Witch Hunter is a character that has been around and will be around for the future. And that makes them want to be a part of that, because they feel like now there's this established world, there's this established character. So congratulations to you for building that brand now and actually being someone, when people come to Comic-Con and they just walk by the booth, they're like, wow, this guy has established himself. And I just think it's awesome to see all the activity going around the booth today and to see the fruits of your labor, knowing you for a few years now, really starting to come to where you expected them to be,
right? You know, and thank you for saying that. I mean, it just, when people notice that, I really appreciate it. Like, this guy came by yesterday. He was an agent and a lawyer as well. And, you know, he described it back to me as both timeless and timely at the same time, because he says to me, what do you think is the essence of a good property? And I said, you need to basically draw on the best of everything that's come before, but add its own hip, modern spin to it. And that's what we try and do with Witch Hunter. I mean, we're not going anywhere. It you know, we've been growing slowly but surely, but now it's actually starting to get up to a quicker pace. Now you can actually buy the individual issues at our website, monarchcomicslayer.com. And we've been slowly getting footholds into more major distribution. So we're not going anywhere, and the issues will always be available. And each trade and single issue will always make it easy for people to jump on and just have a good, you know, self-contained story. But if you want to hang around for the longer one, I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised with where we're going with it, because the 60 issues that we have planned for this first main story is we're going to try and make it as epic as we can.
Well, you know, Secret Identity will be along for the ride, and it's just great to be here and see this all really coming together. And I thank you for your time. I know you're super busy at the booth this weekend. Hope the rest of the weekend goes as well as the first half has gone so far, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Oh, yeah, and thanks very much. I really appreciate it, Brian.
The necessities in life, like comic books, food, and gas, are not getting any cheaper. We can't do anything about the cover price, but you can shop around for a good discount to help you out. Or if you're one of the unfortunates who have lost their local comic book store, can Brian and I help you out? No, but Discount Comic Book Service can. At DCBS, it's so simple. You download your order form, you pick the shipping you want, whether it be weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly, pick your books, and just like that, comic books delivered right to your front door. Need bags and boards with your books? Bam! You got them. Now, each and every month, you choose from hundreds of titles at 40% off. But for deeper discounts, there's books for 50% off and, amazingly, 75% off the cover price as well. That brings many books to $1.25 a copy. And how long has it been since you paid a buck and a quarter for a new comic? And these are just a small sample of the discounts and incredible service offered at Discount Comic Book Service. So join many of the Secret Identity listeners that have experienced the ease and savings of DCBS. For more information, just go to www.dcbservice.com. And if trades are your game, www.instocktrades.com will blow you away with similar savings and a huge selection.